Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is the summertime, and you know, some people you don't get to catch up with as often as you'd like. This fellow and I, we used to get together three, four, five times a week, sitting around jibber-jabbing about sports 32 years ago. Now we try to make it once or twice a year, and when he writes a book and I release a documentary and all that stuff happens, I would love to get him down here for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I have the Gold Rush Sevens Doublers. We're going to be back out on the road on July 12th when the New York Yankees return to Baltimore and the base brawl and whatever that was a couple weeks ago anyway. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll be down at Fadley's in Lexington Market. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Jiffy Lube Multicare as well as Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping the water crystal clear for me. We're going to talk about frozen water and ice and all that stuff. Before I say that, our friends at Royal Farms and pouring the coffee into our coal roofing mug here and making things happen and percolating. This guy has made my entire career percolate from the time I was 23 years old. I met him. He doesn't remember it, but I met him at an all-star game in Pittsburgh, him, his sister, his father, his famous father. And I was with Jimmy Jackson. All these years later, he finally has a book. I mean, he's called all sorts of things. He is famous for being a Mike for all seasons. Kenny, I'm a little bit of a marketing dude. I would have gone with a four, like the number four, because you call all four big sports. So I would say Mike for all seasons, his three decades announced in the NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB, and not that the Olympics aren't big, but he did them. He is Kenny Albert, forward by Wayne Gretzky and Walt Clyde Frazier. Goose is no longer available to do it for. And you didn't call me. You didn't call me for I'm in it. Thank you.
You're in there. You're in the book.
Look, dude, I got a publisher copy. I didn't even get an autograph one. I mean, I got to come see you. We got to get a crab cake, dude.
Well, we'll have to send you one. We'll have to send you another copy, but first of all, great to be with you as always. Now, I know we met at the All-Star game initially, like you mentioned, but the first extended conversation was 34 years ago this week. It was June 22nd or 23rd.
So is that the press conference underneath the arena? Is that it?
It was down the street at the Days Inn, down the street from the arena. That was the press conference to introduce the head coach of the Skipjacks, Rob Laird. I was up there as well on the dais, and I remember having our first extended conversation that day, 34 years ago this week. Well, amazing how time flies.
Yeah, how did that go? Do you remember our first? Because I often say to my wife, a great story for a book would be when two people meet and stay connected their whole lives. But I think it's even more special when it's Lennon and McCartney, or when it's Simon and Garfunkel, or maybe not Albert and Aparicio, but certainly you changed my life. And I just want to say that. And I'm very appreciative that I was significant enough to make one of the pages in your book to be a part of your life. And I put my documentary out and had a piece in the middle when you entered my life. But you entered my life, and it was all very brief, right? I mean, your Skipjacks thing, now that you look back and your kids are colleged up and life is where we are, when you chronicle your life and you try to put it into a book, the Skipjack thing was an interesting part of your journey too. I mean, it kind of set you on your way. And I remember Tom Ebright saying to me, we're bringing in Marv Albert's son. He won't be here long. But like, literally, he said that. One of the first things he said to me, he won't be here long.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned it in that respect, as far as, you know, the fact that it was only 2 years, because there is an entire chapter in the book on those 2 years in Baltimore with the Skipjacks.
So I didn't know you sold advertising. I got to say that. See, I read the book, but I didn't know you sold advertising.
Wasn't very good at it. I made three sales, a batting cage, driving range up in north of the city, I think in Cockeysville. And then we had a hotel gym, a gym at the Hyatt downtown, bought some advertising from us, and a sports bar in Fells Point. Those are my three sales throughout the summer of 1990. And we gave them everything. We gave them season tickets for about $500. They got season tickets. They had commercials on the radio. They had player appearances. So we threw it all in to seal the deal. So that advertising sales was not my forte, But we did meet that first day, and you mentioned that you were one of the beat writers covering the team with the Evening Sun, and you were also on the music beat at the time. And then once the season rolled around, you were obviously at the games covering for the Evening Sun at the time. And I would have you on as a guest between periods to recap what we just watched.
And literally, I was a pretty reluctant dude to come on because I was a little nervous. I mean, I was nervous coming on with you.
And you had to climb down that ladder. Remember the ladder into the broadcast?
Yeah, and I knew my ish. But I'll be really honest with you, man. Like, you were pretty polished early on. And you never, and this is a complimentary of you. You never overwhelmed me. And you always encouraged me that I could do it. That even when I was nervous, you would calm me a little bit. And during the conversation, just the eye contact you made with me, stuff early on, let me know that I was doing a good job. And then you invited me back. And then you're like, I got a show. And Jerry, do you want to do it? And I'm like, I don't, you know, I know a lot about sports. I guess I knew more. That's the thing I realized when I started doing it. I knew so much more about sports. And the thing that I didn't know in reading the early part of your book, you know, I don't want to say I thought you were the water boy for the team because Dad was the broadcaster, but I didn't know you had such a working role so early on. I thought you kind of hung out and Dad was there or whatever. I didn't really realize the extent of your preparation to do what you did when I found you. When I saw you at the Days Inn, it wasn't just because you were Marv's kid. You clearly could do it. You clearly had aptitude for doing it, but I didn't realize what went into your trips to Shea Stadium that your mother didn't know about, that you wrote about in your book, that taking the train late at night when you're like a 15, 16-year-old kid, just stuff that happened that I don't want to say I thought you were a golden child because you worked too hard for that. You've always worked too hard for that. But I didn't realize that you were a grunt like me, like when I worked at the Dundalk Eagle, and stuff that didn't even make my documentary but would make my book at some point because I did – bang for $5 a story in the Essex Times and little places like that, that led me to you, you know?
And that was my first salary, $5 a week, Port Washington News on Long Island, covering high school sports. And
how old were you, 13 years old or something?
Yeah, 13, 14, 15. Yeah. I tried to do everything I could. You know, I did have the opportunity to go to a lot of games and sit in the broadcast booth, and I would learn via osmosis, but really at a young age, I would bring that tape recorder around to various games and was so excited when I wrote a letter to the Port Washington News, our local town paper, and a woman named Amy Pett hired me to cover the high school sports for $5 a week. And I wasn't driving yet, so my mother would have to bring me every Monday morning to
what
slip.
What did you do with the $5? What was important to you then? Did you,
I remember I had an
account, what did you do?
I had an account at the Dime Savings Bank. And they had those little passbooks back then.
Oh, yeah. You had a little plastic sleeve for it.
Yeah, and I would accumulate, you know, a couple of $100 over the course of the year.
And when you put money in, they put it in a little thing, and you would see the type go, and it would come out, and you would see, Dad, I have $291 now, right?
Yeah, exactly. But she would drive me every Monday morning. We'd have to slip the envelope with my article under the door. And then when I was in high school, I started writing for the high school.
Did you type it? Typing was a hard thing to do if you didn't have a computer. Like, we were both on the fringe of being able to literally have a keyboard instead of ch-ch-ch-ch.
So when I was in high school, 83, 84, 85, 86, I remember there was a computer room in the English department, and they had word processors. And I would type a lot of the articles in there. And then I write about in the book, a small cable station, Cox Cable, from a neighboring town, showed up at my high school in January of 84. I was in 10th grade, and I was introduced to the producer. I was there covering the game for the paper, and they had no announcers. They had two cameras and a production van, and that was it. And I raised my hand. I volunteered. They clipped a microphone on
like
the shirt.
Nate's World, right? Literally.
And the rest is history.
Literally, right?
Well, I wound up bringing friends along as color analysts. I called about 100 games over the course of the next 3 years. And I thought that I had such an advantage at that point with the experience, you know, over kids who really wouldn't have the opportunity until college. And then, you know, fast forwarding, getting hired by the Skipjacks. You mentioned the late, great Tom Ebright. I had the great pleasure of sending one of my books to his wife, Joyce. And she sent me a really nice note back Still lives in the Mount Gretna, Pennsylvania area, which is where I had my first interview with Tom. And
got to get me in touch with her. I would love to have her, Jim.
I
She's
will
from
definitely
Dundalk.
connect you.
I would love to have her on just talking about the skipjacks and talking about what a great man Tom Ebaugh
And I
was.
keep in touch with a lot of the other folks who worked in the office, Alan Rackvin, Sherry Petty, Cliff Gault. We all
Well,
worked
we
together.
all get to get now. You know, when Trotz was coaching the Caps, all those years he coached the Caps,
Yep. He was my, as you read about, he was my roommate on the road for 2 years.
he would make one day a year to come up. And it was always between games. We'd work it out. He'd be getting his car, no PR. No, he would just drive up and sit for several hours. But he always wanted to know if Sherry and if you know the whole
And
crew,
Margaret Robinson, I
Margaret Robb, of course,
not mention a moment
we
ago,
would
but she's
put
a
it
big part of that
together.
group too.
Mike Nossett, different people would all come together and hang out with Barry in Baltimore when he coached the Caps. That doesn't happen everywhere. And it doesn't happen everywhere that Albert and Aparicio meet 32 years later. And we both have done our things in the world. And you've done amazing things. But we both have worked with the same people in the same places. And we wind up in the same places. And whether it's Goose on the sidelines with you or me on his lap over at the barn, and these people like Barry Trotz that keep popping up in our world. And the Panthers just won the Stanley Cup the other day. So Jeff Rimmer's kid is all over my page because he was a Panthers guy and he's my friend later in life. Sports and hockey and broadcasting and all of that. But your dad, I want to ask you about this because I want to hear more old stories. Because I mean, anybody can talk about Gretzky and you've told those stories before, but I didn't know any of this about you, Kenny, and I've known you a lifetime and I found the book to be compelling for me. Because I found you at that point where Tom Ebright said you're going to be something. 4 years later, you're launching Fox and Home Team Sports and all of that. But that point for you, your dad's one of the most famous men in America through several sports, certainly in New York, one of the most famous men in the most famous towns in the country. And you get this opportunity and people give you a shot because your name, hey, I got inside stuff because my name was Aparicio in some quarters in some places. But then you have to go prove yourself. You know, Stedman thought it was cool that my name was Aparicio and that my uncle Omar served him wine at this. But then I had to write and then I had to go report and then I had to go do what I did. Same thing for you. What did your dad make of you when you were 10, 12, 14, 16, when you went from being, hey, sit in the back of the press box, this is Mr. Clyde, and like all of that, to doing your own thing? When you were like, you get this cable gig, your dad must have thought, whoa, he's going to be like me. Or maybe he knew that all along, or maybe you knew that all along.
You know, it's funny when I think back, we never really sat down and had discussions about it. It's not like he gave me lesson plans, but I would just soak it all in. And I write about a lot of this in the book. Whenever my uncles came to the house, and they were both longtime broadcasters as well, Al and Steve worked basketball, hockey, boxing, numerous other sports.
They both did my show.
They
Yes,
both did your
all the
show.
Alberts have been on my
But
show.
I felt like I was listening to the first all sports radio station. They would be sitting around telling stories about various games and teams and players, and I was just all ears. You know, I would soak it all in. And then when I was old enough to start tagging along, he would bring me to basketball, hockey, football, boxing, and I would do the stats for him and help with some of the research. And you know, I think he knew that this is what I wanted to do, but because he would see me doing it into the tape recorder, and then when the opportunity came about with Cox Cable and then moving on to college, but it wasn't like he sat me down like in a classroom atmosphere, so to speak. It was just a lot of just nonverbal communication, I guess. Me watching him, and then he would listen to my tapes and watch my games. And I remember when he came into the studio with us in Baltimore to do one of the talk shows. But
That night changed my life. You know that, right?
it
Your
was just
father
up.
changed my life. He walked out on me and made me do it myself. And I swear to on my life, I was
I guess
frightened.
he didn't want to miss the opening faceoff, I guess.
He put his
A couple of
fur
blocks
coat
away.
on a 27 degree night in February or January in downtown Baltimore. I had been playing with you for a month. And I tell you right now, I know how frightened I was doing it with you, even just doing sports radio. I wasn't frightened, but I was never confident that I could do this or that it was an aptitude for me beyond writing because I did not have your background. I did not do radio into my hairbrush in the mirror. You know what I mean? Maybe I sang songs that way, but I never thought of myself as being an interviewer or doing what I've done for a living. I was a writer. I was going to be a sports writer. You knew that about me. I never talked about doing anything other than maybe writing at Rolling Stone.
Now, you brought up a key point, the interviewing skills that you had from writing. I did not nearly as much writing as you back in the day, but I did write in high school for the town paper, the school paper, wrote for the college paper.
Yeah, paid $5. You must have been pretty good.
Exactly. But I feel like, and even some of the writing classes, the journalism classes, I felt like a lot of that translates into broadcasting. So you might not have realized it, but a lot of those skills that you acquired from your writing days did translate when you had to do an interview on the radio, for example.
You know, I never got the impression that your dad called Tom Ebright and said, give my son a chance. You know, like it never, that I never smelled that, or that Marv would ever want to do that on your behalf or whatever. You earned your own way all the way through all of this. And I think that is, you've made your own mark. And why the book? Why now? I mean, I know we talked last year about it coming out and it was on its way out. It's been out for a little while now. And dude, you're so damn busy. I mean, you know, part of having the book is like, you're the busiest guy in the world doing this. And we always find time or make time. And I always want it to be like, it's never has to happen right away. I just want it to be great. But the book could have happened at any point. Why here and now?
Getting back to your first question, and I'll get to the book in a second, but I did feel like those 5 years in Maryland, two in Baltimore, and then three closer to Washington, were so valuable, you know, similar to what you talked about when you made the transition from print to the radio side. But I felt like going to a different market away from New York sort of really helped me create my own identity and get the reps, doing the 2 years of Skipjack's hockey, 80 games a year, some with color analysts, some without. That was such a huge part of my life, even though it was only the 2 years in Baltimore and then the 3 years of home team sports. As far as the book goes,
felt like your home team sports guys? Was Lachlan your guy?
Craig Lachlan, the great Locker. We did hockey together. Al Koken was the sideline reporter. And then I filled in on some Bullets at the time, now Wizards and Orioles games as well.
Rimmer left, and you know, Forns was there. You know, I just was trying to put into perspective because you didn't do that very long either. Right? I was like the Kevin Hatcher, you know, kind of a couple of 93-4, like that, five.
Yeah, right? 92, 93 through 94, 95. Jeff Rimmer was still there for a year. They split the package. So he was doing the away games. I was doing the home games. Jeff's a good friend.
Just retired.
They had a
lot of fanfare in Columbus, Ohio.
Great ceremony for him in Columbus. But as far as the book, felt like I had a lot of stories to tell, like you, I'm sure. Whether it was with regard to the four sports that I've had the good fortune of working for all these years, Olympics, story about my early life, born 3 months premature, spent the first 2.5 months in an incubator. I was 1 pound, 15 ounces. You know, as you probably read in the book, my parents actually met at a sporting event at Shea Stadium. One of them was doing the pre and post game show for the Mets. The other was working as an usherette, 19 years old at the time, back in 1964. Stories about travel tales.
The Mets weren't any good then, by the way, either. You know,
that was only their third year. They were not very good. there are travel tales, stories about my color analysts that I've worked with over 200 of them. Stories about favorite games, memorable games, a chapter paying it forward to young broadcasters. I speak at a lot of broadcasting camps every summer. I have three coming up. And the kids are high school and college age, and they always ask such great questions. And I find myself telling a lot of the same stories. So I decided, why not try and put pen to paper? During the pandemic, we all had a lot of time on our hands. So I put together an outline, some sample chapters. A book agent by the name of Andrew Blauner in New York had contacted me and said, if you're ever interested in doing this, I can try and connect you with a publisher. And Triumph Books was outstanding during the entire process. And the one thing I take so much pride in, Nestor, I wrote it myself. Now, I did have help from my wife and kids, but no ghostwriter. I wanted it to be my voice, my words. Surreal to see Wayne Gretzky and Walt Clyde Frazier on the cover. Two of the greatest, you know, the greatest hockey player of all time and one of the top 50 in the NBA in the history of the league. And I've worked about 15 games a year with Clyde now for the last decade plus. Wayne's a colleague on the NHL on TNT. So to see their names on the cover every time that I look at the book is definitely surreal.
A couple weeks ago, I was in New York. This is before my wife broke her ankle. By the way, I had no idea how easy it was to get from Center City to MetLife Stadium for a Rolling Stones concert out of Port Authority for $8 on a bus. Like, you never could have told me. I would have spent lots more time in Manhattan for those events. But so I'm up there, and I inadvertently, not inadvertently, but there's a bar called Stout. About a block from Madison Square Garden. And I've wound up there. It was a blogging event there like 15 years ago with Gary Vaynerchuk and Sarah Spain and a whole bunch of people. So I just wind up getting a beer there from time to time. I'm always staying somewhere, you know, 28th Street, Chelsea area, somewhere in Center City. I love Manhattan. I come up a lot for concerts. I love the Garden, as you know. I don't bother you for tickets. I don't say, Kenny, I'm in New York because you're in Detroit calling a game or something. But
tickets aren't as easy as they used to be, as you know.
And well, it ain't even my, I just boom, SeatGeek, I'm good, or whatever I got to do. StubHub, Ticketmaster, whoever it is. Whoever's going to give me the fees, bring it on. I'm going to the Garden and seeing a game. So, but we went to New York, and I came into Stout, and I walked in there at 4:30 on the day of game 3-4, whatever it was. The game was in Carolina, and or it was in Florida. It was Carolina. Either way, a month ago, and it was like walking into the Garden, and it was like all Rangers fans, all glued to every TV, hundreds of Rangers fans in Center City, and being there. I got to think that I was at the Garden, courtesy of you, sitting next to the great Linda Cohn. The night that the Rangers could have won the cup back in 94, we were friends back then and you got me tickets and like all of that. For you with your career, you called a lot of things. I mean, I saw you out in Vegas with Trotch, you called Stanley Cup, like all of that. What's left for you? Because when I'm in that room with all these Rangers people, I'm thinking like, probably that's all that's left for Kenny. I mean, maybe you'll do a Super Bowl one day or do this or that or whatever the aspiration would be. What do you got left to do, dude?
By the way, that game 5 in 94 that you were at, that was the night I met my wife, which I also write about in the book.
We actually met
after that game.
Messier scored a bunch of goals in the second period. They gave up like 3 in the first, right? Vancouver,
yep,
right?
Yep. Down 3-0, tied it at 3, lost 6-3.
I took it off the top of my head, but it was a hell of a sporting event.
Yeah.
And by the way, Linda Cohn, I love you. I've always loved you. And I had more fun with you that night. I know she didn't remember me, but I remember her. And
yeah,
at a night next to Linda Cohn when the Rangers can win the cup. Anybody that's listening, they don't even know who I am. And those who can't, you know what I'm talking. I had that experience with Linda Cohn. You don't forget that 30 years later.
Yeah, Linda's a huge Ranger fan. You know, I've been real lucky, Nestor, as you know. I've called 2 Stanley Cup finals on the TV side, one with NBC, one with TNT, and we'll have it again next year in the rotation. 8 Cup finals on the radio side, Olympics, baseball playoffs, NBA playoffs, NFL playoff games. Did have the opportunity to call the world feed, the international feed of Super Bowl 46 in Indianapolis. It wasn't on in the United States, but it was on everywhere else. So, you know, I love what I'm doing, love being involved in all 4 sports, coming up on year 31 with the NFL on Fox, the NHL on TNT, unbelievable crew with Eddie Olczyk and Brian Boucher. Love working at MSG, Rangers Radio, some Knicks television. The schedule comes together like a jigsaw puzzle, but, you know, obviously the big events are the ones you strive for, and we will have, like I said, the Stanley Cup final again next year on TNT. Would certainly love to work a Super Bowl one day on network TV in the U.S. I've done the world feed, like I said. You know, that would obviously be the goal of any play-by-play broadcaster. But as I write in the book, there's a lot of work involved, a lot of prep, a lot of travel, but I never really feel like I'm working. So that's a tremendous feeling to have each and every day. Really enjoy the preparation. Sometimes of the year are a lot crazier than others. Right now, I have a lot of downtime over the next 2 months, which is nice. But once September kicks in and the NFL gets underway, and then the NHL and NBA in October, you know, it's like the hamster on the wheel. It goes around for about 6 or 7 months and never stops between flights and hotels and preparation. But that's also the most fun time of the year.
But you're a homer for the Rangers, right? I mean, in a general sense, right? Like, the Rangers winning would be – I mean, the Celtics won again, right? I mean, so some of the – if it happens, that would probably be the kind of call for the fan base there, because you're theirs and they're yours.
Right. I mean, that's the team I've been associated with for almost 30 years now. And I was lucky enough to be on the call when they won in 94, but that was for the NHL Radio Network. They came close this year, won the President's Trophy, best regular season record, fell short to Florida. They had a 2-1 lead in the conference final. They have a tremendous team coming back next year. So if they can do it next year, I would be lucky enough to have the call on the TV side on TNT.
Kenny Albert is my guest. Sometimes I'm his host. He has written a book, A Mic for All Seasons, My Three Decades Announcing the NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB, and Olympics, Gretzky and Frazier, and all sorts of, you know, Joe Bucks and Steve Levy's and Mike Tirico's and Rondé Barber's on the backside of the book. Just the state of sports in a general sense, and I guess in the state of the world, getting around the airports after the pandemic and all of that stuff. College sports and the NIL. Man, if you and I just had a big fat meal somewhere in Manhattan, just rapped for a couple of hours about the state of sports, what would you say about modern times? I mean, women's sports out in front, Caitlin Clark, there's just, and the shrinkage of horse racing and boxing and just different things during, I had Jerry Eisenberg on this week. So you and I had the world's greatest living sports writer still, you know, just wrote a book on Larry W. So I feel like when I span these generations of having people like you on, I like to put the dipstick in on where you are on sports in general and what you like and don't like about it these days.
You know, I think the biggest difference between when we were growing up and we're right around the same age, and even when we started in the business, is technology. I was talking to somebody the other day, you know, in the 70s and 80s, when we were, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old up until our teenage years, whether it was baseball, football, basketball, hockey, you could only see your local teams for the most part on television. And then you would have the game of the week, whether it was Monday Night Football, Saturday afternoon baseball on NBC, Monday Night Baseball on ABC, the other leagues would have a game of the week, but you would hardly ever see the other teams unless they were playing your hometown team. Now with technology, you know, I'm not sure kids these days really watch entire games. You know, they're watching highlights on their phone. They're clicking around. You can see any game you want. You're rooting for your fantasy team, not necessarily a specific team. So that's probably the biggest thing that has changed. You know, I remember how excited I was when we first got cable TV. I was about 17 years old, and that opened up, you know, more games and all of the sports on the TV side. I was a big radio listener back then. So, you know, obviously a lot has changed with the salaries as well of the athletes and the price of tickets, like you were talking about earlier. But, you know, I still love all sports. I'll watch everything on TV. I'm involved to a different extent with the four major sports in the United States. And, you know, when I started working, a lot of the preparation was daily newspapers, weekly publications. Then all of a sudden, something came into existence called the internet, where you can click and read any article you want.
God, for Rich Johnson. I'm giving Rich a shout out at Sports Pages from back
then. SportsPages.com, Rich Johnson. That was always a staple back in the day to click on various links. When I started with Fox, they would send us VHS tapes of the two teams that we had coming up. We'd get them on a Wednesday. They would record the games. They'd have to make copies, send them out on Tuesday. On Wednesday, I could start my preparation by watching the previous week's games. Now I can watch them on the phone, on the iPad. I can tape them at home on the DVR. So a lot's changed technologically over the last 30 years. That's probably the biggest thing in my mind.
I'm looking behind you and I see like a big pile of paper. Your office looks like an accountant from 1978. Somewhere. It looks like it would have, you know, cigarette, you know, on the ceiling and a little reading light. Everything I know about you, and every time I see you working, and I, you know, I mean, I don't know if you know or not, but, you know, I've been excommunicated here by the locals that I won't run into you in a press box because they've taken that right away from me. But when I've seen you, the last time I saw you was Sutcliffe at Dodger Stadium. In 2015, my wife and I were, you were calling a game, you were calling a Dodgers Mets game. I came up to the press box to see you, and I am blown away by that cockpit that you work in every day and every night now, but that paper behind you and your paper charts and the way you charted things I don't know. I saw you call Rangers games back in the 90s in St. Louis. I remember sitting in the press box at the Keel with you back in the day. And like just seeing what you do and the photographic memory you have for players, recall, stories to tell. Dude, you've got such a gift about this. And to do it through four sports, there's nobody who even does what you do in a sport or two. Reg Eye, people I know that do this, Beninati, whatever, that don't marvel at your ability to soak in knowledge that you can then make interesting in a 3-hour broadcast. I mean, that's really your gift, but it is the prep time that nobody sees. And the way Dr. J would say, yeah, you see me do that. That's all the practice, Allen Iverson, that you give behind, you know, when you're on planes, when you're in cabs, Ubers, wherever you are, hotel rooms. I just know you would be a very, very studious guy with all of this. And I think not a lot of people would do what you do. I mean, and they want to be you and be these kids in Jeremy's camps and stuff, but I can vouch for you. It's not just hard work and like you don't consider it work, but it's just, it's a lot of time and it's a lot of care to know what the Winnipeg Jets are doing this week because you have to go call them.
Well, people would be surprised, and I appreciate the kind words, but people would be surprised at the amount of time that goes into preparing for an NFL broadcast between all the reading, the watching of prior games and game film, coaches film, and preparing charts and pouring through statistics and then meeting with players and coaches and having our own production meetings. Yeah, I've never really tallied it up, but it's probably about 25, 30 hours a week just for that one broadcast. I have a file cabinet to my left, and I'm somewhat of an organized hoarder. I keep all my game charts that you referred to. I even have the ones from the two Skipjacks years. They're all in a file cabinet next to me. I'll go back the next time that I have a certain team, and you might grab a couple of notes. You know, I might not be going back to 1992, but the funny thing is, nobody will care about this stuff except me. And, you know, hopefully it's not for about 30 or 40 years from now, but my kids will have a lot to go through and throw out, because I don't think anybody else, it wouldn't really have the meaning that it does to me. But just the hard work, you know, that's what I try to talk about with the students, the high school and college students, just the amount of time that goes into it. You don't just show up in the booth at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, at 7 o'clock on a weekday for a basketball or hockey game. There is a lot of work that goes into it. I can't even imagine how many thousands of hours I've spent reading about sports, about the various teams and coaches and athletes, you know, that I've covered. But, you know, that I have a checklist that I go through before each and every game, and it involves a lot of what I talked about, the reading, the watching other games, the going to practices and talking to players and coaches. But
do you ever feel underprepared? Do you ever walk into a booth and think, I could have done more today? Just, I like didn't get enough sleep, had one last night doing hockey last night, basketball, whatever it is. Do you ever feel a smidge do you get a little nervous? I hope my color guy can carry me a little bit more.
Yeah, not really. I've never really felt like that. You know, the one thing before every season, no matter the sport, you have to stay on top of the rules, the new rules, you know, with replay and video review.
Oh,
and
man, that's where you can really get embarrassed, right?
Some of it can get confusing. And luckily, a lot of the networks now have former officials working in roles on television where they can help you out, but you still have to have that basic knowledge of all of the updated rule changes and replay situations.
I'm still trying to figure out the guy on second base in the 10th inning, Kenny. Kenny Albert is here. The book is Mike for All Seasons. Kenny has been my friend, a mentor, a guiding light in lots of cases for lots of young people in the industry. And, you know, I thought you'd be much more misty about the Rangers winning, because I was a little misty for you, because I thought I was in there with all these Rangers people and all I thought about was you. And I thought, you know, this would probably be something that could stoke
you. Yeah, no,
Kenny's so even. Just something to get Kenny's grandchildren, something to get you excited, Albert. Come on.
Well, I will say this. My wife and I took a last minute trip to Paris last week after the Rangers were eliminated, because if they had advanced, I would have been on the radio call for MSG this year, since TNT didn't have the final. We had a great trip, but we joked that I would have much rather been in Edmonton calling some Rangers Oilers games that week. But we had a great time in France. No, if they had gotten back, it would have been tremendous working the games with Dave Maloney, my longtime partner, and it had been 30 years. So there was so much talk in New York about 1994, the Rangers winning the cup, the Knicks getting to the NBA Finals that year, getting to a Game 7 against Houston. And there are a lot of parallels this year. And the Rangers wind up getting to the conference final. The Knicks go to a Game 7 in the second round. So it was a tremendous year for the teams at Madison Square Garden. Love calling the games there. But, you know, as you know, we can't control what happens on the ice, on the field, on the court. So hopefully they'll have a real long run next year.
Well, I appreciate your role in my story and telling my story in a 25th anniversary documentary brought to you by our friends at Curio Wellness and the Foreign Daughter, who've allowed us a year to celebrate. We're going to continue the celebration with the Oyster Tour into September and getting around and doing some cool stuff once the Orioles get into the pennant race. Kenny, it's crazy, man. All these years, 32 years ago, I began this show. This is really the first summer that I can feel, that I feel baseball momentum in Baltimore. Like, you see the stadium behind me, and then obviously Lamar and, you know, hosting the championship game and kicking off against the Chiefs in the beginning of the year. Like, all this is the first summer that I feel like I'm drinking in the all the potentiality of what Baltimore sports could, should be, which is two teams that can win a championship this year. I've been doing this 32 years. I haven't had that before.
Well, the Orioles are obviously having a great year. And, you know, I think back to when Camden Yards first opened and we were doing shows together.
We went to the first game together there against the Mets.
Sutcliffe, we were up on the – and I write about that in the book. We were up on the roof of the hotel across the street. We have a great picture at the first exhibition game on the field with Jerry Coleman as well, the three of us. But going to Orioles games, working some of them, there was just such excitement. You couldn't get a ticket at Camden Yards in the early to mid 90s, and there were some great Oriole teams.
Honestly, that's why our show worked, right? Like, literally, when you had a show, and it, you know, it was sort of like, hey, Camden Yards is opening in April, you know, let's start a sports radio show. I mean, that really was the genesis of what the whole thing was about back in
the day. Yeah, even though I haven't lived there in three decades, I felt so lucky to be a small part of it back when Camden Yards first did open, the exhibition game against the Mets. And then the opening game victory in, what, 2 hours, 1 minute, Sutcliffe pitched a gem, and worked several Orioles broadcasts during the 94 and 95 seasons on home team sports. So I always get nostalgic when I go back and have a bookmaker salad at Sabatino's and work an Orioles or Ravens game here and there. Always one of my favorite places to visit. Love living up in Owings Mills for the 2 years when I worked for the Skipjacks back in 90-91 and 91-92, and the shows that we did on WITH, such great memories. And
by the way, thanks for letting me stay in your place in Silver Spring that night. You put me up in Silver Spring when I did the Tony Robbins Firewalk in 94. I'm appreciative of that.
Yeah, I was living in Rockville at the time.
Yeah. You had a lot of hotel soap, as I remember it.
We didn't charge rent either.
Well, it was nice. It was the little bars. I didn't need anything more than that. You know, at the Albert Inn, or, you know, I don't know what we call it.
Happy to provide the services.
The book is A Mike for All Seasons. Go buy it. Kenny's been my friend forever. I'm in it. I'm in the book. So how can I not pimp the book? I mean, so and have a great summer. And I'm glad you got to go to Paris. I'm sorry you didn't get to call a Rangers Cup thing, but I am. You know, now that the Capitals thing has happened for me and Trotz's thing has happened for him and he got his money on Long Island, he's having a good time in Nashville, and I want the Predators to win too, I want you to win. You know, I'm just you're the last man standing for me that I want the Rangers to win for you. So there's a little piece of me, don't tell anybody, especially not people I know that root for the Rangers, that I'm pulling for the Rangers because of you, okay?
Well, I appreciate it, Nestor. Congratulations on your success and yet another anniversary. Thanks for plugging the book. It's available on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, et cetera. And, you know, like you said, everything comes full circle. And you and I first met in 89, 90. And so many stories in the book about our great mutual friends, Barry Trotz and the late Tony Siragusa. They're both a big part of it. So appreciate any of your listeners and viewers that pick up a copy. And again, thanks for having me on as always.
Absolutely, man. So Kenny Albert joining us from his estate in New Jersey, not Bubble Hill at all, the other place where he's raised his family. I still think we're 22 when I'm with Kenny Albert. I feel you make me feel young again. It's like a Sinatra song. We are doing the Maryland crab cake. Do you eat crab cakes, Kenny?
Yes. Love crab cakes. Had one the other day.
Just making sure so if I do invite you to the Crab Cake Tour, when you come through, you're calling whatever it is that you call, and I never know what it's going to be. We'll get your proper crab cake. Maryland Crab Cake Tour is back out on the road on July 12th. And then after that, like we normally are, and the Oyster Tour is going to begin in September. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. The Gold Rush Sevens Doublers are the, they've been lucky this summer. Had a $20 winner over Coco's last week as well. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water, our well water safe and crystal clear, as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare. Putting us out on the road on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. A little downtime for the 4th of July to honor America and eat some hot dogs and watch some baseball around here, go to some good American concerts. But what a summer we're having around here with the baseball team that's in it. Luke's at the ballpark. Football team's on a little bit of a respite. They'll be back after it soon enough. Give them 2-3 weeks. They'll be back. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Keeping it real with old friends like Kenny Albert. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.